It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives has taken up a proposal to permit the use of marijuana for medical purposes, a potential breakthrough for supporters who have worked for several years to get legalization through the Republican-controlled legislature. Amendments have been passed laying out rules for how the program would work, including eligibility and regulations, but the measure still requires a final House vote. The bill has already passed in the Senate by an overwhelming margin. The amended House bill would limit medical marijuana to those who have been certified by a medical practitioner to have one of a list of qualifying conditions, including cancer, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, AIDS, glaucoma, and chronic or intractable pain. Patients could take the drug as pills, oils, and liquids, but not in a smokable form. I'm joined now by phone by Dr. David Casserette. He's a professor of medicine with the University of Pennsylvania Health System. He's written a book called Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana, in which he chronicles how he changed his mind on the issue. Dr. David Casserette, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Are you for or against making medical marijuana legal in Pennsylvania? Do you know someone who has benefited from the use of medical marijuana? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Dr. Casserette, why were you initially opposed to making medical marijuana legal?
You know, honestly, when I first started researching this book, I thought of medical marijuana as being sort of a joke, a legal way to get an illicit substance safely. One of my patients, actually, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago now, asked me whether medical marijuana might help her, and I said, no, it's just an illegal drug. It's addictive. It has no medical benefits. And she pulled out of her handbag a pile of reprints of randomized controlled trials of the benefits of marijuana. And I had to admit that this patient knew more about the science of medical marijuana than I did as a physician. And so I promised her I'd look into it. And when I started looking into it, there really are some good studies out there. There's some good science, and there probably are some real benefits. And reading those studies, talking to experts and patients, really opened my mind to what the science actually might be.
Do you suppose that there are other medical professionals like yourself who were opposed to medical marijuana and really hadn't researched it, really hadn't looked into it?
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to think that I'm a little bit more open-minded than your average physician. And if I was steadfastly opposed and closed-minded 2 years ago, I'm sure many of my colleagues are. But, you know, we read articles, and there was a prominent meta-analysis that came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association in the last year that found that although there aren't as many benefits as many people claim, there are some real benefits and good randomized control trials out there. So, you know, I think physicians are gradually changing their minds.
And are there some legitimate concerns? Are there reasons why people should have reservations about legalizing marijuana, even for strictly medical purposes?
Oh, sure. I think one of the biggest is that there are some risks. There may not be as many risks as opponents of medical marijuana claim, but there are real risks. The risks of getting high and driving, for instance. When I was researching the book, I tell the story of a patient of mine who admitted to me that he used medical marijuana illegally and that he drove, often very, very soon after driving. And as an intervention, we went to a parking lot outside of Philadelphia on a deserted parking lot on a Sunday morning, and he smoked part of a joint and then tried to drive through an improvised obstacle course as a way of showing him just how impairing marijuana can be. And the results really are as impressive as drinking and driving. So that's definitely a concern. And addiction is also a concern. I never thought that marijuana was addictive, but it is. Maybe not as addictive as cocaine or heroin, for instance, but there is an addiction syndrome and there's a withdrawal syndrome. Those are the risks that are well documented and well known. There are probably others as well.
Well, when you talk about the risk of operating heavy machinery when you're under the influence. I mean, wouldn't using marijuana for medical purposes be the same as using any other drug where clearly you're advised in most cases not to try to do any kind of serious work, or certainly advised not to drive or operate any kind of heavy machinery?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you could argue about the relative impact of, say, taking morphine versus marijuana, but I think the same cautions should apply regardless. And believe me, I've talked to many patients who are using medical marijuana instead of opioids because they felt like the opioids really impaired them more than marijuana does. So certainly the fact that marijuana can impair your ability to think or work or drive should mean that it necessarily illegal. There, as you point out, many legal drugs out there, some available through a prescription like morphine or Ativan, some available in your local grocery store like alcohol that can impair behavior just as much.
We're talking with Dr. David Cassaret. He's a professor of medicine with the University of Pennsylvania Health System. He's written a book called Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. And in that book, he talks about how he changed his mind on the issue of marijuana. We'd like to hear perhaps some personal stories about your own evolution in terms of how you think about marijuana, particularly its use for medical purposes, which the Pennsylvania legislature, the House, is now considering. We are one final House vote away from perhaps seeing medical marijuana legalized in Pennsylvania. Do you think that's a good idea? What are your thoughts about medical marijuana? How have your thoughts perhaps changed? And is there someone that you know, perhaps yourself or someone in your family, a close friend, who is benefiting or could benefit from the use of medical marijuana, from having it be legal? 412-246-2002 is the number to call to take part in our conversation, and we'd like to get one going. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter @esspgh. Again, the number, 412-246-2000. Dr. Cassaret, talk about the ways that medical marijuana can benefit patients. You talked about what one patient told you with regard to her use of it, but there are people who say that if you're in some kind of chronic pain, if you are suffering from concussion syndrome, that this can be of enormous benefit. Explain how that works.
Well, I think the first thing to clarify is that all you have to do is go online and do a chat room or the website of a medical marijuana dispensary, whether or not you happen to be in a state where it's legal, and there are all sorts of claims out there. You can see claims that medical marijuana will treat multiple sclerosis and seizures, it'll cure cancer, it'll prevent Alzheimer's disease. There are lots and lots of claims out there, and dispensaries, frankly, have a big financial interest in getting people to believe that it can do all these things. And it may be that once the studies have been done in 10 years or so, we'll know that those are true. But right now, a lot of those claims right now are not based on sound research. They may turn out to be true in the future, but they're not yet. What we do know is that for certainly some kinds of pain, like neuropathic pain, pain that's due to nerve damage, often happens after trauma, sometimes with diabetes or autoimmune diseases like lupus, that seems to be some of the best evidence for medical marijuana. Also, muscle spasms in the setting of multiple sclerosis, those data are pretty good. Other conditions as well, like loss of appetite in the setting of serious illness, that's really where the evidence is strongest. Many other claims about treating Alzheimer's disease or treating PTSD may turn out to be true, but we just don't know yet.
And you mentioned the concerns that you have, and one of them is that, as you point out, marijuana can be, in your view and in the view of others, addictive. Do you think of it that it's could be a gateway drug, or what are specifically the concerns that you have?
That's a great question. So I think it's pretty clear that marijuana is addictive. I'm not sure there's much debate about that. I'm not sure that necessarily should be a red flag that should cause people to walk away from it. There are plenty of other substances like morphine that are addictive that are prescribed all the time.
Well, there's the whole
right. Addictive as well.
Well, there's the whole issue, Doctor, if I may jump in. There's that whole issue of people being described painkillers that are opioid painkillers that are leading them to become heroin addicts.
Exactly. And that's why I've been very fascinated by people who have told me they would rather use medical marijuana than opioids. Met many people who said they wanted to get off of OxyContin, for instance, and are using marijuana instead. One key difference there is that you can fatally overdose on opioids. Take too much of an opioid, it will cause you to stop breathing, and that's responsible for fatal overdoses. You can't fatally overdose on marijuana. You can have a bad trip. You can have a very interesting couple of hours if you take too much, but you can't have a fatal overdose. So there's certainly some arguments actually in favor of trying to encourage people to use medical marijuana for chronic pain instead of opioids for exactly that reason.
Let's go to a caller in Greensburg. Pete in Greensburg at 412-246-2002. Hi, Pete.
Yes, that's what I was calling about. You said you had concerns about the marijuana, medical marijuana being addictive. But I know several people that are in their 50s that with the doctors and probably yourself prescribed oxycodone, OxyContin, and it is more highly addictive many times over than what marijuana would be addictive, whether it would be driving or even addictive to the drug. And I don't see how you could even compare the both of them together.
Well, you
sure.
go ahead, Dr. Kasserat.
To be clear, I think you think of addiction in terms of the psychiatric definition, which is people who continue to feel the need to use a substance, whatever it is, despite the impact, negative impact that it's having on their health or their work or their social relationships. And if you use that definition, which I didn't make up, I'm just cribbing it from the psychiatrists I know, then marijuana is addictive just as other substances are. Like I said, though, I think it's unfair, at least in my view, to compare marijuana addiction, say, with heroin addiction. The sorts of downward spirals and potential fatal overdoses that we see with the heroin epidemic in this country is, to me, a whole order of magnitude worse than marijuana addiction. So they're very different, and I'll grant you that. But I think it's worth pointing out that marijuana is addictive, and probably, depending on the numbers, the studies you believe, about 1 in 10, more or less, people who use marijuana regularly will develop that addiction, that sort of dependence. Not to say it's the same as getting addicted to heroin, but it is real, and we shouldn't discount it entirely. So I agree with you. We just can't forget about it.
Pete, thank you for that call. Let's go to Michael in Pittsburgh. Michael, welcome. You're on with Dr. Kasserat. Hi, Michael. Michael, are you there? Hello.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I was just wondering what the difference is for getting marijuana on the market as a medical drug. What's the difference between that and other drugs that, you know, as you described earlier in this conversation, are either more impactful or equally impactful to marijuana?
You're implying, Michael, that there's a stigma attached to marijuana.
Yes, and you know, based on, you know, war on drugs and all these things, even though it does seem to be less intense than some of the manufactured drugs that are put on the market.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great point. In fact, the patient I talked about earlier in the show who came to me asking for advice about medical marijuana and whether it could help her, I gave her this canned lecture about how marijuana was addictive and didn't offer any benefits, but I was perfectly willing to write her a prescription for morphine then and there, and I don't think I'm that unusual. I think a lot of physicians are comfortable and probably even overly comfortable sometimes writing opioid prescriptions, for instance, but back off and are really reluctant to even think about medical marijuana. Again, I think that will change slowly, both because there's more evidence now supporting use of medical marijuana medically, and also I think many physicians like me are becoming aware of the opioid epidemic that we're facing in this country, and we're realizing that that morphine prescription has potentially some dire consequences for patients. And I think we're becoming more and more aware of that. So the tide is shifting in both directions.
Let's go to Mia in Squirrel Hill. Hi, Mia. Thanks for waiting. You're on with Dr. David Kasserat, the author of A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a little nervous because this is the first time I've ever spoken sort of publicly about this. I'm 29 now. when I was 23, I contracted oral herpes, which resulted in a whole bunch of neuropathies, including damage to my trigeminal nerve, which just results in really chronic severe facial pain. So severe that I had to leave graduate school, move back home. I kind of turned into a non-functional person. And it was through the support of my family that I started using marijuana. And it was really the only thing that helped with my pain. And it really turned me back into a functional person. And I'm really happy to say that over the years, my use of it has been able to really decrease with my being able to be more active. One of the things I've never spoken about it publicly because I would love to be an advocate, but it's so important to me that I would be afraid that it would be taken away or I'd get in trouble. The other thing is that I don't like supporting the illegal drug trade, which, you know, is criminal activity. And so I just want to say that without it, I probably wouldn't be alive. I probably would have committed suicide, but it has just turned me back into a person. And so I'm grateful that you're discussing this issue.
Well, we appreciate your calling in and sharing your story with us, Mia. Stay with us. First of all, we're awfully glad that you did not commit suicide, that you were able to find a way to survive what sounds like a horrible ordeal that you were going through. How hard was it for you, before we get Dr. Cassaret's reaction, I'm curious as to, you had to say the laws be damned because it wasn't legal to do what you were doing. So how are you able to come to that decision?
It was actually, my family really supported it. All of my family is in medicine, and just due to the fact that neuropathies don't seem to, that drugs don't work for neuropathies, I certainly didn't want to become addicted to opioids. My family encouraged it, and so I just decided I was going to go with it. And it really just, it was just so life-changing that I couldn't leave my house because I was in so much pain. And it just wasn't even a decision after that. Once I had experienced it, I knew that I couldn't go back. And fortunately, I was able to escape the illegal drug trade by having, you know, friends that were growing it. Because that is really a big issue for me. So the politics are important to me, as well, but, you know, I've learned to be able to balance it out, you know, not drive, be very responsible. But so that is really how I came to my decision, and I don't regret it. I am so grateful to have access to it.
And we're certainly, I don't think anybody would be too judgmental about you, Mia. Thank you for that call. Certainly Pittsburgh is working through the process of decriminalizing marijuana. But I'm guessing, Dr. Cassaret, that's a fairly common story these days, what Mia just shared with us.
Yeah, it's a great story. And Mia, I'm glad you're doing well. Not only is it a great story, but it's really a textbook reason for why we should think seriously about legalizing medical marijuana. There's, at this point, easily a dozen decent randomized controlled trials showing that medical marijuana helps for neuropathic pain, pain due to nerve damage, which is exactly what Mia was describing. And that's actually one of the reasons why I've gradually swung around to be more in favor of legalizing medical marijuana, because it seems silly to have a treatment that is demonstrated to be effective and yet have to get it through supporting the illegal drug trade, which with everything that goes along with that. So I'm glad Mia made that decision. I'm really glad she's doing well. And it's in situations like that and for people like her that I have in my mind when I think of decisions about whether states should legalize medical marijuana, because it definitely worked for her.
Thank you for the call, Mia. Jennifer in a tweet says, here's a twist. My doctor urine tested me, found marijuana, and in one day took me off narcotic pain medications. Talk about suffering waiting for medical marijuana, says Jennifer. Let's go to Joe in Monroeville. Hi, Joe. You're on with Dr. Cassaret. Oh, we lost Joe. He had a question, though, that was relevant to the earlier tweet I mentioned, and he asks, how would this affect jobs with random drug checks? I'm guessing if you had an excuse from your physician, that would be the way that you could deal with that, Dr. Cassaret?
Yeah, maybe. Although I've certainly talked with other physicians and other patient groups in other states where medical marijuana is legal, and it seems to be a wild west right now. Some employers, I think, are supportive and realize that as long as their employees are healthy and functional and acting within the state law, then they're fine with that. There are certainly other employers that take a much harder line, including some employers that have a national presence and are worried about federal implications in terms of federal law if they don't crack down on employees. So I think right now the general advice I've heard from patients to each other and from other physicians is to be really, really careful. As for a physician who withdrew opioids all of a sudden, that's certainly concerning, and I would hope that whether or not you're in some place where medical marijuana is legal, that we have an obligation to work through problems with our patients rather than just walking away.
Let's go to Tim in Pittsburgh. Take one last call here. Hi, Tim. You're on Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
Hello, doctor. I'm a future pharmacist, and I wanted to know your opinion on whether or not you think dispensaries should have to have a licensed pharmacist, or is this something that should contain another license to be able to dispense marijuana?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are different models around the country. I'm not sure I could weigh in on that specifically. In general, though, I think dispensaries should have licensed healthcare professionals, and they should be equipped to provide patients with the information, the education, the counseling they need. That might be a physician, it might be a pharmacist, it might be a nurse. I'm not really sure we know what the best approach is, but there are too many dispensaries out there where you can just walk in and buy whatever you want with no education or counseling whatsoever. I think we're really doing patients a disservice. So thinking about pharmacists, thinking about having a nurse on site, those are all interventions and structures that I think we should hopefully have in place in Pennsylvania.
Marcia, in an email, says, I am a long-term medical marijuana patient. I reside in California and am currently in Pittsburgh. There is very sound research, volumes of it. It has been used medicinally for centuries. I wish that Pennsylvania would just take California's lead on this. And again, that is Marcia in an email. Dr. Cassaret, before we wrap this up, I've been struck, and I'm sure our listeners are as well, with your candidness about your epiphany, for lack of a better word, when it comes to medical marijuana. What has the reaction been from your colleagues to your change of heart?
I think it's been very, very positive, at least those who are speaking to me. The folks who aren't appreciative may just be keeping quiet. But I think I'd like to think that the secret to that, the reason I've gotten plenty of compliments, is that I've really tried to take a balanced view. I talked about the benefits that we know of. I tried to be critical when dispensaries are claiming benefits that don't exist. I've tried to talk about risks that we know of and bracketed some of the risks that are more speculative. So I really have tried to take a very, very balanced view, which no matter which side of the argument you're on, hopefully is useful. I mean, whether you're for it or against it, I'd like to think we're all talking about the same risks and benefits in the same way. You may look at those risks and benefits and come up with different conclusions. That's fine. But you should know what those benefits and risks are. And that was really my goal in writing the book.
Okay. And one last quick question. Can you address the difference between THC and CBD?
Sure, in a nutshell, so THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD or cannabidiol are the two cannabinoids, the two molecules that are present in the highest concentrations in marijuana. It's THC that's responsible for the high feeling, the euphoria. It's also responsible for the anxiety and paranoia. CBD doesn't have any psychoactive effects. Do you hear about kids using or their parents using CBD oil for seizures? That CBD oil doesn't have any psychoactive effects at all. Probably have different profiles of therapeutic benefits and maybe often working together in combination. But a lot of people are getting more interested now in CBD. It's kind of the quiet cannabinoid. It's what you don't usually hear about. Doesn't have psychoactive effects. May have many more therapeutic benefits than we realize.
Dr. David Cassaret has been our guest. He is a professor of medicine with the University of Pennsylvania Health System. He's written a book called Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana, in which he chronicles how he changed his mind on the issue. Dr. Cassaret, very much appreciate your time with us on this program today. Thank you so much.
Glad to be with you. My pleasure.
Coming up, an investigation conducted by the Pittsburgh Tribune Review reports nationwide over the last 20 years, the U.S. Department of Justice has declined to bring charges in 96% of civil rights complaints. We'll talk to the reporters behind the story, and also later in the show, U.S. Attorney David Hickton joins us. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.